Welcome to the Industry 4.0 podcast, powered by Utility AOR. On this podcast, we learn about interesting technologies that is changing the way work gets done. Today, we're talking to Paul Boylan from Vivid Edge about how energy efficiency as a service can provide significant savings to your business while not drawing from your limited capital reserves.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Tell me, what are we going to talk about today?
I think, Pat, today we'll talk about energy or energy efficiency as a service, which is about how we introduce capital into energy efficiency in the marketplace.
Okay, step back a second. What do you mean energy efficiency as a service? So I can understand other things that the as a service moniker. Tell me more specifically, what is energy efficiency as a service?
So I suppose, as far as Vivid Edge is concerned, I'm technical director at Vivid Edge, by the way, where we enable energy projects for organizations who have other priorities for the capital. That means we bring the capital to them. And that, I think, is the essence of energy as a service. You have your, you know, Netflix, if you want your movies, you have your Spotify, if you want your music. What we have is essentially a subscription service that enables people to do large energy projects. And when I say energy projects, I'm probably talking about energy efficiency projects, you know, the retrofit projects, some behind the meter renewable energy projects, some storage solutions. You know, storage is going to play a big part as we decarbonize the grid going forward, and controls as well. Those are the sort of areas we focus on. So what we do is, where organizations don't have the capital at hand or they have other priorities for their capital, we bring the capital to that. And we call that, we brand that overall as energy as a service. We called it energy efficiency as a service, but it's too big. So we just call it energy as a service to cover a multitude.
Okay, so if a company wants an energy efficiency project implemented, energy as a service companies would pay for that project to be implemented. How do you get paid?
So we do. We get paid by bringing the capital. There's a cost of funds associated with that. But you start from scratch. You look at a company. If they want to look at energy efficiency, they might be well on their journey. They might know what they want to do. Or they might be at a very early stage of their transition and having an iota where to turn. So what we do is we engage with the client, as would any energy performance contractor or ESCO or energy service provider of any description. They engage with the client, find out what the problem is, the challenge is. And what we do is we enable the solution of choice that they have already identified, or we steer them in the way that can help them reduce or decarbonize their business.
So if a company has a project they were thinking of, let's imagine it's a renewable energy project for the sake of this discussion, because it's easy to imagine. You bring the capital to pay for that project. But what I mean when I say how do you get paid is, ultimately, how do you recoup your capital then? How does that work?
Okay, so what we do is we charge a fixed fee, monthly fee, to recover the cost of the project over time. What we do is we probably spread the payments over, depending on, every project is different. You say renewable energy, our primary focus is actually on energy efficiency. So say, for example, it was an LED project. If someone was migrating their lights from conventional lighting to LED solutions, we would look at the technology initially. We'd look at what they're seeking to achieve, what the anticipated saves are. And what we're trying to do is come up with a model that can use the savings to pay for the service over time. Then at the end of the service, we just hand the asset over to them.
Ah, okay, I understand. So if I have a business and I want new lighting, then you will pay for the changeover to the new lighting, and then I'll pay you a monthly fee, which in principle I'm getting from my savings on lighting bills. Is that right?
Absolutely. But it's not just a straight migration. What we try to do is get the best value in there. We try to adopt the best principles. You know, it's, if you're looking at a lighting solution, and I'm keeping it simple at the moment, it's not just a case of swapping out one light for another. It's about looking at the lighting environment, whether it's balanced, whether, you know, the lumen level is sufficient. And then we look at the technology. We look at the efficacy of the lamp. We look at the quality of the lamp, the savings, the wattage. And what you do is you start to build a very good business case for migrating across. And then you also consider the indirect benefits associated with lighting, which could, you know, there's savings in the HVAC side of it as well, because you're not generating as much heat from the lights. So we look at that, we put it, packages all together, we look at what the savings are going to be, and we look at the cost, and what we do is develop a business model to work within those parameters. So what we want to try and do, what's very important is, if we can, if it's at all possible, to structure it in a way that is cash flow positive for the client. So that means the client has put no money down up front. They have access to the savings. The savings are greater than our fixed fee. So they have an upside, and they're still and they keep all the upside. So they're still incentivized on a monthly basis to turn the lights off if they don't need them. They don't just leave them on because they're cheap lights. Or not cheap lights, but lower energy consuming lights. They switch them off. They're still incentivized.
Okay. So I think there's two different parts to what you just said there. The first is, you sold yourself short when you said you were bringing capital to the table. It sounds like you're bringing a lot of expertise in the area, in this case, let's say for lighting, but I'm sure it could be for other energy related areas. Explain that a little bit. In general, are you looking for projects which the customer has completely specced out, or are you providing a consultancy service where you're going to identify the projects in their business which would be suitable for them?
It's a bit of both. Sometimes the client, what we call the warm lead, is where the client already knows what they do. And we're technology agnostic, by the way. So we allow the supplier, we're not tied to any technology. So the supplier can choose their technology, and provided that it's good quality, you know, not the cheap brands, we will review the design. We will review the performance, the likely performance. We'll even take into account the useful life of the asset, what the maintenance regime would be post-installation. And what we do is we build a picture on what the performance of that particular equipment is going to be like over time. We look at degradation, for example, you know, the drop in efficiencies over time. We map it out over a period of time. And then I suppose that's the warm lead. And then where the client doesn't necessarily know what they need to do, what we start doing is we can do a number of things. We can start to map out, contextualize what they want to do. We can facilitate energy audits, the preliminary requirements to look at what the client needs to do. Because ultimately, the client wants to reduce their energy consumption. They want to decarbonize. They want to probably optimize their performance. So what we try and do is work with them to find the right solution, and then we mobilize it.
Wow. So, well, the mobilization, that's the next step in the chain. So you've talked about the capital, and you've talked about the project review before you start. Are you involved in the actual implementation of the project?
Directly. Well, we outsource a lot of the requirements. I mean, we're not all things to all. We will pull in the necessary resources on each occasion. If we need project management skills, well, we probably have them in-house, and we have a degree of design capabilities, even though we're not designers. I can certainly myself look at most designs for most applications and I'm long enough in the tooth, I know what I'm looking at. So I can do the initial analysis on it. But as we migrate into the project, we would have involved designers to make sure that the design stacks up. The technologies, we would have done technology reviews to make sure that the technology stacks up. And that might involve a trip to the factory just to make sure that it's the right thing. And then the project management piece will take an active role in delivering the project. Largely, we might engage a main contractor or subcontractor or specialist contractor as required to deliver the project. If it's an LED project, we're not going to go and get two or three layers of supervision on it. We're just going to get a lighting provider, and we'll work with that provider to make sure that the project is delivered to the appropriate standard.
Okay, but I can imagine, so in implementing projects in many companies, the cost is much higher than the simple cost of a man going up a ladder and changing a light bulb. Rather, there's a lot of health and safety aspects. There's a lot of scheduling challenges around other things that are happening on site. There's a lot of insurance challenges and whatnot. Do you roll all that into the project? Can you work with the customer to manage all that stuff? Or is that stuff, in effect, providing them with an internal project management function? Or do they usually provide that project management function themselves?
again, it varies project by project, but we can enable all these things. I mean, we front 100% of the CapEx up front, but that's not just for the labor and materials. That will involve all the professional services required, safety, design, project management as required. And what we try and do is try and keep the CapEx down as much as possible. But there are the mandatory requirements. I mean, if you're looking at solar, you have to consider planning as well. And of course, every installation, you have to consider the safety requirements. And we would, and right through to the handover, the testing and commissioning, it's not just all LEDs, I suppose. It could be anything from refrigeration right through to your heating systems. We're looking at such a broad suite of technologies at the moment, it's off the scale.
I can imagine. Well, I mean, there's a lot happening in the energy efficiency space. Sorry, so one final question, just on understanding the project cycle. So once the project has been completed, you mentioned that ye just take a fixed fee rather than a performance-related fee, which could go up if the project performs extremely well. Explain the different models there that ye and other companies might follow with regards to performance and things like that.
Well, I think there's a load of different ways you can enable energy projects nowadays. I mean, there's the lease solution. You can, of course, do it your own cash solution. And I think we're very close to the cash solution where an organization has their own cash. And all we're literally doing is we're stepping in and taking up the reins, assuming it's the right project. We would do whatever the client would have done themselves had they engaged certain parties or whatever. But there's also, you know, there's the energy performance contracting space as well. That's a shared saving model, which definitely has a big role to play in delivering energy projects. There's lease models. There's energy performance related contracts, EPRPs or EPRCs, whatever. There are a number of different mechanisms. There's bonds, there's all sorts of things, bank loans. But what I think is different with us is we've been involved in this gig in some shape or form for quite a period of time. You know, I've been involved in the energy space for 25 years and I've done an awful lot of projects over the time in a past life with large blue chip companies. I think what's different here is we throw the experience eye over it as well to make sure that it stacks up and make sure that everybody's pulling together to deliver the project. It's such an important factor. What I would say is that there are some suppliers offer funding solutions as well, just to get back to the funding question. Some suppliers offer funding, but that's normally for their own particular technology. So if a particular refrigeration company wants to find a way of delivering their particular technology, they might be able to enable it, provide some funded solution. We are technology agnostic ourselves, as I said. Although we don't invest in cheap and nasty brands, the client is generally free to choose their preferred technology and provider. And assuming that those guys, whoever they select, are of good quality, we can move forward with the project.
Excellent. Okay, that's really, really interesting. Actually, so in saying what you just said there, you highlighted a flaw in the host's planning here. I didn't properly get you to introduce yourself. We jumped straight into what it is, into energy performance contracts. So go ahead. Tell me, Paul, about your background, how you got into this space.
It's an interesting journey. I mean, I'm a chartered engineer with an MSc in the green economy. I'm an AE, Association of Energy Engineers, certified energy manager, energy auditor, certified measurement and verification professional. So I've been involved in the energy efficiency space. In a past life, I was real estate head with Citigroup, and I looked after the Ireland portfolio. And I did a stretch in the Middle East as well, looking after 9 countries over there on the premises side. One of the biggest challenges I always had was trying to find a way to meet the organization's OPEX expectations, you know, reduce your OPEX maybe 10% a year or 5% a year, whatever the number was. You were always challenged to reduce your operating costs. And the way I didn't want to lose headcount because we were running lean as it was. I didn't want to lose jobs in the team. So I suddenly started really focusing in on energy and saying, why are we running this for 20 hours when we only need to run it for 14 or 15 hours? And I started building quite a unique model that was taken up by the rest of the organization, where I would give the businesses in the bank that I worked for at the time, I'd give them a window of 16 hours a day where I would build the cost of running that center for 16 days. I'd build that into the OPEX cost. And if they wanted to operate overtime or expect me to pull in chillers and boilers or whatever outside of normal working hours, outside of that 16 hours, I would pass through the energy cost directly to their cost code. That had a massive effect. You know, businesses had no problem getting overtime for their staff or anything like that. But when it came to paying extra money for out-of-hours activities, well, they didn't like that. And it didn't go down very well. So it was a bit of a double-edged benefit in that the HR people were really delighted because we were getting work-life balance back into the workspace. And we found that where particular departments needed to work beyond the 16 hours, that they would group together, consolidate, and they were mobile within the building. So we started to really zone in, reduce our energy costs. In the first year I piloted it, it was back in June. It was 2010. I think we reduced our energy consumption by something like 25%.
Wow. Wow.
You know, rather than leaving everything running because one particular department in the building wanted to run for 20 hours a day, you know. Yeah, it was very fruitful. I started to realize, in answer to your question, energy efficiency for me started out as being an enabler to stop losing jobs. I found a new way of achieving my OPEX targets, and I did it through energy efficiency. And then for me, it got very exciting with the organization at the time. It was Citibank. Over the course of 4 years, we won 6 national awards for corporate social responsibility, energy, SEAI awards, all different sort of awards for everywhere. So it was really exciting. So I really believe in energy efficiency opportunities.
That's brilliant. All right.
But the fact that I'm from Cavan, I'm naturally mean, you know.
I'll let listeners who don't know about Cavan men do some research themselves, separate to this this event. Okay. So tell me, Paul, when if a listener is new to this, and it's the first time they've heard about this type of, I wouldn't say technology, but rather solution, where would you encourage them to start? Are you expecting to hear from people who like the idea of energy efficiency or renewable energy in their business but have done nothing? People who have hired in consultants or looked into projects themselves and spec'd them out themselves? Or, in fact, people who already have started projects, have they gone too far? Who can speak to you? Tell me about the stage that a project should be at to engage with someone like yourselves.
It's an interesting question because, you know, if you want to invest in energy efficiency, the word in the street is, or the recommended action is to try and do it as quickly as possible rather than having to retrofit down the road. But we have so many different types of clients. We have clients that are starting their journey. You know, they want to transition to net zero and they don't know where to start. Normally, we'd suggest that they do an energy audit or we can facilitate an energy audit for them. Then we can identify opportunities out of that. We can tell them what it's can look like. We can model the activity going forward, what their energy consumption profile will look for over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years if they do X, Y, and Z. Then on the other hand, you have organizations who have a strategy, who have a structure, and they're saying, right, in this year, we want to do this, but hold on a minute. We've got to replace all the carpets in the building as well. So we can't do that this year. We'll do it next year. That happens all the time. I've seen projects that have been ready to go. You know, all they need is the capital approval. And they've been sitting there 5 years later, no movement whatsoever, because there's other priorities. And that's the basis for our model. You know, we will enable those projects. But the beauty of this is we encourage organizations to stop thinking like they're buying it. They're not buying it. What they're doing is they're paying a subscription for an energy efficiency technology that will reduce their OPEX and reduce their emissions. So if we can structure it in a cash flow positive way, and not all projects are cash flow positive, I might add. Some of them aren't just performing, but they might be required for other reasons. You know, they might need them to function as a business. But what we do is we make them happen. So yeah, the clients, there's so many different routes that, I mean, there's no fixed way. It can be a client that's ready to go with the project. Can be a client that wants to know where to start. And it might be a supplier that has a client that can't just get it over the line. You can't sell his produce. And what we'll say is, well, right, okay, let's have a look at it, see what we can do. And we'll go in shoulder to shoulder, meet the client and see if we can come up with a solution that's palatable for the client. So that it's really, it's different strokes for different folks, like, you know.
Of course. Of course. I mentioned projects that have already kicked off. Is there hope for those?
There is. There is. In some cases, one of the things we're doing, and I think I haven't heard of any other organizations actually doing it, is if there's a project that is 50% on the way, our model is we take ownership of the project. So we will buy the 50% that's already been done, give them back the money for whatever they've invested for that, and then we can treat it as a project whole and just pick up the reins. Hopefully it's in good shape. It would need to be in a reasonably good shape, and still the same criteria. It has to be good technologies. The client has to be reasonably good credit as well. But what we do, we can take them on. There's another thing we do as well is, you know, where an organization might have just completed an LED project or a solar project, and suddenly they're a bit cash strapped for other reasons. God knows in the current climate, there's a lot of organizations out there that are a little bit cash strapped. So what we'll do is we can buy back that particular project and deliver it back to them. We give them a check for it and then spread it out over time. So it's essentially refinancing the project.
Well, that's very interesting. That's very interesting.
We can do a number of things. I mean, a lot of the feedback we get from our clients revolves around flexibility and agility. You gotta. There's no two companies the same. They all have different circumstances.
Okay. That's really, really interesting. Thanks, Paul. What is the minimum size for a project to be worthy of engaging someone like yourselves?
What we often say, you know, typically we're looking at projects in excess of 500,000 initially, 500,000 euros, and go up to 20 million probably. That said, if something comes close to that, we're not going to turn our nose up at it. We try and find a way to solve the solution. And sometimes if it doesn't work for our model, it's no harm to talk to us because, you know, we're not bad guys. We'll actually help steer them the right way if there are other alternatives out there, or we might make them aware of potential other funds that are out there that might be able to accommodate their particular project. So,
right. You know,
we're very value driven. And I think most of the energy performance companies out there are very value driven. They want to see reductions in emissions. I think it's a common theme. I get it all the time.
I'm bought into that. Great. So often in these types of projects, there's going to be grants and you mentioned planning, but let's just take the grants element. How does that work out where, you know, the customer ultimately is the one who still owns the asset, do they? So the grant is for them, or how does that work?
They own the asset after the service term. But look, Pat, what we do with the grants is if we can access the grants, and it's a bit of a dark space at the moment, because first thing I'll say is any subsidies, grants or allowances or benefits that come by virtue of the project, they pass through to the client in some shape or form. You write it down against the CapEx, or you just give them, you let them just deal directly with whoever is issuing that incentive.
So the final thing is around, you very much flagged what you do as being an energy efficiency measure, and that's Vivid Edge. The first question is do you cover, like in a lot of cases, the reason why energy efficiency projects are implemented is because those lights are looking shabby and we want newer lights, or this building is cold and we want a better performing heating system or whatever. So do you do projects which are only tangentially energy related in nature? And in fact, do you do projects which have nothing to do with energy?
Not really to the latter part of that question, but what we look for is projects that reduce energy consumption or reduce emissions or result in increased efficiencies. So if you have a factory that's churning out 1,000 widgets per hour for X amount of kilowatt hours, if the project will result in them increasing that to 1,500 widgets an hour for the same amount of energy, that's considerable uplift in efficiency. So we see that as the right thing to do. Our target is to decarbonize and enable projects that reduce emissions and reduce energy costs. A myriad of reasons. Every organization might have different drivers for why they're doing this. Some have a carbon plan. Some have a compelling requirement to migrate. I mean, projects, one example is, you know, a migration from a heavy fuel oil boiler to a natural gas fired boiler. That's a massive reduction on your scope 1 emissions. So that, and it saves a hell of a lot of money as well. So those sort of projects. And, you know, I'll also say that a lot of technologies when you go to the next generation, you know, in most cases, you're going to see an uplift in efficiencies. And that can range from anywhere from, you know, 10 to 40, 50%, depending on what you're doing. And also another thing I find is, you know, from the Celtic era, the Celtic Tiger era, there was an awful lot of installations that were probably a little on the oversized side. So when they're replacing them now and they right size them, there's considerable opportunities to reduce energy consumption. So
excellent.
There's loads of different reasons. And then, you know, sometimes the EPA might be on someone's back to reduce their emissions, you know, in a particular sector, or they can't have this dirty diesel generator throwing up emissions and they want to replace it with, you know, something more emission friendly. So everybody has their different drivers and different targets.
That makes a lot of sense. That's been really, really good, Paul. Thanks a lot. I realize we're coming up to half an hour now, so probably we should give some time back to our listeners. How can they get in touch with you or hear more about what you do, Paul?
Yeah, well, people can visit our website, which is www.vividedge.ie, or if they want to email us at info@vividedge.ie, or indeed if they can email myself at pboylan@vividedge.ie. Happy to talk. I mean, as I said earlier on, the first step is picking up the phone and saying we want to do something. And we'll always encourage that. We might not be able to address the challenge, but we are likely to know someone who will. And if we can't solve it, we'll certainly put them in the right direction. And the irony is there are so many opportunities out there. And it used to be capital was the barrier, you know. It's yes. Not the barrier anymore. And you know what? If you're getting something and you don't have to put any money down, up front, and you can structure it in a way that you're cash flow positive, so you're going to take some money out of it, should you be mad not to? You know, that's the way I feel about it, you know?
You're totally right. Well, everyone is capital constrained, ultimately. Superb. Listen, Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks a million. Great. Take care.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. You can subscribe on all the usual channels. And find out more about our sponsors, Utility AOR, on utilityaor.com. Utility AOR can be your partner for